5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wendy Bell. Inspiring solutions to save America, one show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
Space is exciting.
You're gonna literally see the craters on the moon with your own eye.
Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see. A full moon is that complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases.
She blinded me with science.
And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that?
Science!
Attacks on me, quite frankly, are attacks on
science.
The sun is a mighty powerful heat. It is almost impossible to go near the sun.
She blinded me with science.
The moon is more manageable.
Space, it affects us all. And it connects us all.
It's 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. You've just signed up for the WBR Army. Welcome aboard. This is the Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Okay, hour number 3 of the Wendy Bell Radio Program. Edie's official, and I would encourage you if you're new to the program and you're like, God, I like her. She's smart. Duh. She's fun, of course. And she knows what she's talking about because she's a common sense conservative mom. I want to follow her. I want to get her podcast, Wendy Bell Radio. Wherever you get your favorite listening material, like us, follow us, share us, give us a 5-star review. Glad to have you. So we kind of stumbled upon this sit down. CNN sent out a reporter to do a story on what is clearly a serious problem for the Biden administration, and it is the hemorrhaging of black voters, specifically young black voters. And so they go out, and it's a black reporter. She's going to go out. She's in Atlanta, and she's going to sit down with 4 young black voters. Now, this is curious. Because you would imagine young black voters, I'm going to go with, are not that dissimilar to young white voters. The economy is killing everybody. 1 in 3 Generation Z voters is not working, is not making money, does not have a job, and has super, super bleak prospects and views of the future. This probably is not a racial thing. It's not. But what the CNN story unwittingly uncovered is something far more insidious than democratic failure at a government level. It uncovered indoctrination. Because this particular reporter decided to go to historically black colleges and universities to cherry pick these 4 people. I don't know why you want to go to a college when there are plenty of black people who are working construction, who are doing other jobs that didn't involve college. Specifically, the people selected for this sit-down interview with the CNN reporter are black college students. So what do you think they want to talk about? Why do you think they say they really don't like Joe Biden? Now, I would go with the economy. I would go with jobs, meaningful jobs, life-sustaining jobs. I would go with, obviously, inflation wrapped into that. The American dream, credit card debt, gas prices. I mean, how many ways can we talk about this? I would also talk as a black person about the great replacement, because it's happening in all of these environments where you've got migrants coming in, pushing people out. I would be worried about that. That's not what these folks wanted to talk about, though. We got a couple audio sound bites for you. We're going to start with the anchor setup before she introduces this reporter. Audio soundbite number 1, CNN talking about black voters, young voters, not really liking Joe Biden. Go.
Well, President Biden is going to need a strong showing from his 2020 coalition of voters if he wants to win again in November. And right now, he He's struggling with one key part of that coalition, CNN is finding, younger black voters. CNN's Renee Marsh sat down with students at HBCUs to dig deeper into why they're hesitating.
All right, so why? I'm interested. You got me. I'm curious. Let's go. So then the reporter jumps in and she's like, all right, here's what we did. We decided to go to these four HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities. Why? I don't know. But we did that and we selected these four people. Here's the explanation. Go.
If I were to vote tomorrow, I wouldn't vote, period. Ideally, I would like to vote third party.
I will vote for an independent candidate.
I'm considering either voting for Claudia De La Cruz or Cornel West at this point. If there is no substantive policy change when it comes to the genocide in Gaza, then there's not really a discussion for me.
Wait. If there's nothing like substantial policy change about Gaza, you guys know what the Democrats have done to you. You realize that they have used and abused you, that they've lied to you for generations. They told you that they were there to help you, and all you have been is dissed and dismissed, stepped over, and you guys want to talk about Gaza? That's got to be an anomaly, right? Well, let's find out. Audio soundbite number three kind of gives us a backdrop on who these people are. Go.
All four told me they were raised and originally registered as Democrats. But this year, the president's handling of the Israel-Gaza war has turned them away.
I think what Biden has done in aiding and abetting in a genocide is just something I cannot stand for.
You're willing to withhold your vote in the presidential election unless there is a ceasefire.
Yes.
And it's implemented.
Yes.
Not voting could mean Donald Trump gets into office. Do you think he'll be better on Gaza?
Trump would probably say flatten Gaza and make it into a golf course. I have absolutely no faith in him.
Well, now that's a product of bad education. They're not learning at college about history. They're not learning about science, apparently. They're being told that the number one overarching issue that, by golly, we all have to have our pants on fire about is Gaza. And what happened? How dare Israel retaliate after, 1,400 of their people were exterminated and beheaded? Their women raped and murdered in front of their husbands and children. And they've been brainwashed into believing that Gaza is the number one issue turning them off to Joe Biden. It's not the economy. It's not gas prices. It's not jobs. It's not migrants replacing him. It's this. Yes, it's this. And Donald Trump, he'd probably just want to put a golf course over there. This is what they're learning in school. And so the reporter goes on, well, wait a minute. You realize that you have a role here, because if you don't vote for Joe Biden, aren't you essentially giving your vote to Donald Trump? And we so don't want to do that. Audio soundbite four.
Would you not say that also the people who are not voting for one of the two people who are the likely people to really be in this race have a role to play in kind of giving the race to Donald Trump in a state like Georgia where it's going to be like razor thin?
Yeah, no, I'll do you one better, actually. I think that just means that's why the Democrats should listen.
Exactly.
Democrats should listen to us. We care more about something going on another part of planet Earth than we care about our futures being stolen from us. That's what we care about. Now, here's the better part. These people aren't out protesting and picketing for, school choice, which could help their own children break the cycle, right? They're not talking about anything like that. They're radical and active, and they're protesters. This is what they learn in college. Go.
Radical and more tapped in than their peers is how the group describes themselves. Rokia even helping to organize this demonstration in Atlanta last October, calling for peace and aid for the Palestinian people. While they don't speak for the majority of black voters, their dissent poses a real concern for Democrats in battleground states like Georgia.
I'm absolutely speechless. But are you surprised? The indoctrination is real. It's baked into the fabric of colleges and universities. This is why there's such a difference between young, black, college-aged voters who are in school and those who went right into the workforce. It's not even a question. So the bigger story here, this is the reality. Why they don't like Joe Biden, his policies on Gaza. But beyond that, listen.
We are holding their election in the palm of our hands, and they're not listening.
We're tired of just hearing him say these things, these empty promises. We have no trust in Joe Biden.
The Republican Party isn't earning their vote either.
Both sides are just equal.
Yeah, both,
all
yeah.
In all. Nothing is being done for us. If enough people vote third party, we can win. That's my thoughts.
So they went to the Biden administration and they said, hey, CNN did. Hey, we sat down with these four black students and they just absolutely skewer you guys. What's the response from the Biden administration? This is how they tout Joe Biden's appeal to young voters and how young voters should appreciate him. Listen.
President Biden's campaign has touted his success on key issues affecting young voters, including student loan forgiveness, lowering unemployment, and tackling inflation. Still, though,
I don't feel it. People may be employed, but can they survive?
Isn't that your number one issue? Shouldn't that be more important than what's going on in Gaza? No, because they've been indoctrinated. And finally, CNN wraps it up like this. Perfect question. Go.
What could President Biden do to change your mind as far as how you'll vote in November?
Call for a permanent ceasefire and actually implement it. I would like us to stop giving aid to Israel.
If he doesn't get elected, that is his fault. That's not our fault. That's not the black voters here. That's not X, Y, and Z. No, it's on him.
It's on him if he doesn't do what needs to be done in Gaza. That's what they care about. This is endemic to higher education. We don't have to just dismantle the alphabet agencies, ladies and gentlemen. We need to reimagine education because the way it is now sucks. All right, so why Free Palestine is the new leftist grift. This is what the young, I'm going to tell you what the young black people we just heard from can look forward to if they vote this way. Next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. It was so interesting listening to that CNN sit down. Now, we cut things up to provide little snippets for you. The whole sit down interview is something to the effect of maybe 5 or 6 minutes. And if you listen to it in its entirety peripherally and you're not really paying attention to it, you can just hear voices. But when you hear that they all go back, the four black students all go back to the conflict in Gaza. Gaza, 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 Gaza. How is it possible that there is more support for Hamas that beheaded people, that paraded women's bodies around, that mutilated their corpses, that set people on fire? The depravity there, how is it possible that so many people can be brainwashed into thinking Hamas was nothing more than a cornered animal that fought back? That's not fighting back. That's called evil. And these people are brainwashed into this grift. And it could very well cost Joe Biden everything. Well, those students that we just heard from CNN, if they'd like to continue on this path, maybe post-graduation they'd be so lucky to graduate into the auspices of these ne'er-do-wells who decided to invade the U.S. Capitol complex and the cafeteria used by the Senate with demands. How do you get involved? How do you get inside, first of all? And where is anybody there with a set of huevos to push back and say, I don't think so. Get the hell out. Where did the stones go? Where did everybody become a sniveling bystander? Breitbart with the story. Anti-Israel protesters shut down Senate cafeteria. Because that makes sense. Because this is all that matters. A group of anti-Israel protesters calling for Congress to support a ceasefire and end military aid to Israel shut down the Senate cafeteria. The group called Christians for a Free Palestine. How do you do that? How do you wrap Christian? We believe in God. We're do-gooders. We believe in helping others, right? We're based in our love of God. Then that is not congruous with supporting Hamas. It's not. Period. Because Palestine elects Hamas leadership. Palestinian, the Palestinian people are into Hamas. They are together. These aren't just like bystanders. Listen to this. The group of protesters, Christians for a free Palestine, excuse me, captured on video in the Dirksen Senate office building and could be heard chanting, "We are Christians for a free Palestine. We are here to pray for the food of Gaza. And our scriptures say, woe to you to eat while others go hungry. Woe to you, for there is famine in Gaza." Do we not? What are we doing? And this is totally allowed. "Congress and their staff will not eat today," the protesters can be heard saying in one video, "until Gaza eats." You have brainwashed, or you're watching the gradual brainwashing of a generation of young people to turn free-thinking individuals who are singularly unique and intelligent in their own ways, and literally brainwashing them to be the advocates of a new victim class. And that's all they can do. The protests came as the people of Gaza face mass famine, as fighting, but war sucks. Everybody says we shouldn't do war anymore. War, war, war. Then why does the United States give so much to Hamas? Why did the United States give billions of dollars in stuff and aid to the Taliban? Why are we providing billions of dollars to Iran? Why are we doing this? That's the greater question I have. Well, if you ask NPR, you're going to get a very one-sided story there, my friends. Have you seen this blockbuster interview? Barry Weiss, independent journalist, sitting down with a gentleman who's like a 25-year senior editor at NPR. And the guy says, "Oh my gosh, we are beyond unfair and imbalanced." Your draw, you might just hit the floor with this one. I've got it all broken up next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. Several years ago, a family member and I were having a conversation about being on opposite ends of the political spectrum. I will say it was a one and done conversation. It shouldn't have been. But it was. And I will take some blame for that because I was ready for it and I was probably defensive because it's just exhausting. You're allowed to believe whatever you want to believe. I'm going to believe what I want to believe. And we really don't need to meet in the middle on those beliefs because politics shouldn't rule our lives. We should be able to talk about our families, reminisce, maybe plan to get together sometime in the future. But this individual wanted to talk about my individual news sources. Where do you get your information? And I said, you know, I really all over the place. CNN, Politico, Axios, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Fox News, Newsmax, all these different places. And she said, well, you know, it's interesting. I found this graph that shows all of the media out there that's available in the United States. And they put it on this kind of continuum, left to right. So you had the far left things over here. You had the far right things over here, if there really are far right things. And then you had this sort of sweet spot in the middle. And it seemed like the majority of the publications that were in this article, this continuum, this spectrum of coverage, most of the things were in the middle. And she had said, you know, I get a lot of my news from NPR. And I'm like, and she's like, what? Look at the continuum. Look at how it says it's moderate. I'm like, come on, man. There ain't nothing moderate about NPR. And she was very upset at me that I would possibly mock that NPR wasn't anything other than objective. And I was like, I'm sorry, but NPR sucks. It's very political. It's one way. It's not fair. It is what it is. Oh, and that devolved into something else. And we moved along and didn't talk about it again. Well, it's interesting. Because only a moron thinks that NPR or any of these other outfits is actually fair, balanced, equitable, or even remotely in the middle. Because they're not. Duh. And it should not take a gentleman who's been an editor there for 25 years to say something to blow the lid on this. We all know. But I want you to hear this. Of course, NPR, National Public Radio, taxpayer-funded radio. It's going down the tubes. Only 30% of their own audience says they trust them. That's not good. That's like CNN. And so much for fair and balanced. This gentleman, his name is Yuri Berlinder. He's a senior editor, 25 years experience with NPR. And he's sitting down with Barry Weiss to talk about what he says is really the unraveling of his company. And he starts at the very beginning, back at 2016. He talks about the election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump as he blows the lid very candidly on the inner machinations of NPR's newsroom. Listen.
I think like every newsroom, every legacy media newsroom, we were shocked, disturbed, distraught, really troubled. We assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win and she didn't, and it was really an unsettling experience. But I also think, to me, it revealed that we didn't really understand a lot of what was going on in America, that we were out of touch.
Yeah, I'll say. Look, when I was in television news and I had to anchor the evening coverage reporting that Barack Obama won, not once, but twice, I wanted to vomit. But I didn't tell anybody I was upset. I didn't act like I was upset. You do your job. Your job comes first. Your politics step aside. Well, just not at NPR. And then he says, this gentleman who is a senior editor, Yuri Berlinder of NPR, he says, beyond us being shocked, and we shouldn't have been because we were clearly out of touch with the American people by Hillary losing, everybody thought she was going to win until 63 million Americans showed up and voted for Donald Trump. We should not have hitched our wagon to Russiagate. Russiagate was a dud, and we had Adam Schiff on far too often, and that was a mistake. This is big. Listen.
After a while, we started covering Trump in a way that, like a lot of legacy news organizations, that we were trying to damage his presidency, to even find anything we could to harm him. And I think what we latched on to was Russia collusion, like a lot of news organizations, which was, as I write, sort of catnip, although it was just rumors and a lot of it based on pretty shoddy documents. We really latched on to Adam Schiff. He was like our muse to the Trump collusion story. We had him on constantly. And then the Mueller report came out and no collusion. And, you know, I think we sort of went, the story kind of disappeared.
Yeah, we let the story disappear. We also didn't cover, I don't know, the Steele dossier, Fusion GPS, Hillary Clinton's campaign, the wiretapping, all that. We really weren't all that interested. And we just kind of let all of that Russiagate stuff go away because it was a lie. And then he says, beyond that, we tried to kill the lab leak story. We didn't cover that. We did anything we could do to damage Donald Trump. Go.
It's a pretty big thing to say that America is infected with systemic racism. That's a big deal to say that. That would be a great starting point for reporting, looking for evidence, figuring out, is this true? Is it not true? Is it how, to what extent? But I think sort of a...
Well, what he's saying is, of course, if we could create the illusion that in this country under Donald Trump, everything is worse. Black people hate white people hate black people. We're going to beat this drum incessantly until it doesn't work anymore. And it was fueled, by the way, we should say, by their former NPR CEO, John Lansing, who thought white people needed to atone for their guilt and set up a directive that everybody who worked for NPR, who had to go out and do a story, needed to ask the people they were interviewing their sex, their political ideology, their gender, and their, like, sexual disposition on things. Why would you do that? Why would you care? Listen.
At one point, I got so frustrated with what I saw was the sort of the lack of different perspectives in our coverage that I decided to look at voter registration among our staff. And what I found was 87 registered Democrats on our editorial staff, 0 Republicans. I presented this at a all hands or a large news meeting, and I said, "Hey, look, something's gone wrong here.
Something's gone wrong here." We have 87 people on the editorial team. None of them is a Republican. This dude actually went in to records to find out how people had registered to vote who worked at NPR and found that they had zero representation of the Republican Party point of view of half of this country. How is this revelation any different than colleges and universities who say 95% or more of their faculties are leftists? What do you think the result is going to be? Those 4 black college students who have been brainwashed into thinking what is going on between Israel and Hamas is the overarching end-all be-all, the number one issue. We must fight and win that subject. And this gentleman is saying the quiet part out loud. The bias is absolutely real. Now, it's interesting because news outlets have picked up this story. Breitbart did pick up this story. And they talk about senior NPR editor admits Russiagate was a swing and a miss and expresses regret over hitching the wagon to Adam Schiff. But you know what? It's funny. This gentleman can tell the truth. Do you know who's still peddling the Russia collusion idea? None other than Nancy freaking Pelosi. With her flapping pterodactyl hands, she's going to tell you right now that she believes, oh my gosh, Vladimir Putin is going to do whatever he can to help Donald Trump win. Because that makes any sense. This was yesterday. Listen.
So who benefits from it? Donald Trump. Who benefits from Donald Trump? Putin. In my view, a connection there.
In her view, there's a connection there. This is my exhaustion with hearing from Rand Paul that 15 federal agencies in these United States knew 2 years before COVID that the Wuhan Institute of Virology was fiddling with a coronavirus, that they wanted to make it deadlier. And they said nothing when COVID, quote unquote, broke out in a once-in-a-lifetime global pandemic. That's unacceptable to me. The whole Russia collusion nonsense, the impeachment one, impeachment two, these indictments, the stupid 91 criminal charges, they choose all the wrong people, all the wrong storylines, and they've chosen the wrong villain. Because what CNN did not report to you in that the black students talking about why they won't vote for Joe Biden, the real story should be why the young Generation Z black voters who haven't gone to college, why they're selecting Donald Trump, what they see in conservative values and why they are leading that way. Why is that? All of the propaganda, all of the nonsense, all of the bias from NPR, even when they come out after the fact and admit, yeah, we kind of suck. We already knew that. Enough people are listening, ladies and gentlemen. The Great Awakening is real. All right, quick timeout. When we come back, tracking the trajectory of another terrible progressive idea that has just officially crashed and burned. I'll tell you what it is next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. I think it's kind of interesting to note the time elapsed from really crappy idea to roll out lousy execution and crash and burn, right? Because everything that the left puts out starts with, oh my gosh, we need to do this because if we don't, we're going to kill the earth, or you're going to die, or you're a threat to blah, blah, blah. There's always some big danger, right? Which forces us in a really fast, haphazard fashion to all climb aboard something, like the black students there, all climbing aboard Gaza. This is where this is my end all be all right now. Yes. Got to get into that. Into that cattle chute, got to put on your clone trooper outfit. The homing device has been activated. You're ready to you're locked and loaded, ready to go, right? And then ultimately you get to that critical point where, you know, what we thought we were doing and what we're really doing aren't the same things, and what we're doing is expensive and kind of sucks. So how do we back off of this and get off the road? That's the question. Gallup, news.gallup.com. Here's your headline. EV ownership ticks up, but fewer non-owners want to buy. All right, so you've got this negligible boop of people who have gone out and they've bought, I always want to say boughten, they've boughten an electric vehicle. However, the number of people who say they plan to in the future by the same degree has ticked down. So we're sort of at this weird impasse. But the story gets kind of interesting. 7% of Americans, up from 4% a year ago, report that they own an electric vehicle. 7%. Isn't that a remarkably low number for the amount of electric charging stations these people have put out? Have you guys gone by one of your local universities? That's what I call these monster gas stations that are all service. We have them. It's called Sheets. We call them Sheets Universities because they are massive complexes, right? And you've got like 15 different charging stations, and there's like one guy in a Tesla standing outside waiting for his car to charge. And we drive by and I'm like, I just fail to see the allure of this. What are we doing? Well, not much apparently quickly. Fewer Americans, 35%, this is down from 43% in 2023, say they might consider buying an EV in the future. But this is the interesting thing. What do we know? Electric vehicles cost more. Electric vehicles cost more to maintain. Electric vehicles have more issues than regular vehicles. It's hard to drive an electric vehicle very far, because you're, of course, dependent upon plugging in somewhere, and we certainly don't have the infrastructure for that. And even though these companies have tried to do their virtue signaling woke DEI dance, oh, we're going to go all electric, says Volvo, in 2035, right? Oh, Jeep says, forget Jeep gas guzzlers, we're going to do plug-ins. Really? It ain't working. Nobody's buying because the idea was stupid. It was stupid. Overall, less than half of adults, 44%, now say they're either seriously considering or might considering buying an EV, down from 55% last year. So we've crested the suck continuum and we're coming down the other side like a bell curve. What do you think about the people who are most likely to want to buy an electric vehicle or who already have it? All right, you already know the answer. You ready? Upper income Americans are the subgroup most likely to own an EV. Why ever would that be? Because they're freaking expensive, with 14% doing so, up from 6% last year. So wealthy people, they buy it hook, line, and sinker. The relationship may affect the much higher purchase price of EVs compared with traditional. You think? You think maybe it's unaffordable for a lot of people? Duh. Even Gallup is mental here. Another 11% of upper-income Americans are seriously considering buying an EV. This is when you go to the cataclysmic drop. People who are broke, who are in the lower echelons, right? They don't want them. 61% of lower-income Americans say they wouldn't buy an EV, up 18 percentage points from 2023. And EV ownership, by the way, if you're young, if you're wealthy, if you're a Democrat, and if you're college educated, you are the bread and butter of the electrical vehicle world. Young, wealthy, Democrat, college educated. Sort of sounds like the scourge of America that I say. That white, college educated, suburban woman who's ruined everything, everywhere, I guarantee you, she's got at least one in her driveway. Look, this grift here of the climate, this browbeating of changing everything that we do, and hurry, 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 let's roll it out before anybody actually has a reasonable conversation about it. The good news is, the time from idea to crash and burn failure is getting faster. People are not buying what these folks are selling, especially when it comes to something that restricts your ability to get in the car and to just go, to be free. Because I think more Americans see, once you're on the grid, once you're plugged into the grid, once you're connected by a switch to a source of energy that you don't control, that the government does, they've got you. They've got you. They can turn everything off. They can be punitive. They can punish you based on what you say on social media. We already know that the government is asking big media companies, social media companies, to divulge information about those of us who are not in line with the story. And it's the young, college-educated, wealthy Democrats who keep falling again and again for these ideas that suck. No wonder they're always so angry. Folks, we hope you've enjoyed the program. Love being with you. Remember, Wendy Bell Radio Podcast. Go back and listen to us anytime. Thanks for being here. We'll see you in 21 hours. Until then, peace.